Transmission commence in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Level 7.
RandomChatter.com presents
the Strategic Homeland Intervention Enforcement and Logistics Division.
Do you copy?
Perimeter breach.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case files.
Authorizing.
Just call it S.H.I.E.L.D.
Access granted.
Posen, get back to base.
Welcome back, agents. I trust you've all been suitably briefed on the most recent encounter. We'll be your hosts on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files. I'm Director Shepard.
And I'm Director Stolke.
And you've been authorized to undergo debriefing on the most recent mission from Agent Coulson and his operatives, presented to the public as a dramatic hour-long television series known as Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Fortunately, you are all cleared to know the truth. The truth this week includes our very special guest coming in out of the cold, Special Agent Tavano, coming in from RetroZap.com and the Brews and Blasters podcast. Joe, welcome to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files.
Agent Shepard, Agent Stolte, thank you so much for activating me. It's a pleasure to be here.
We are very much looking forward to talking with you about this very exciting episode, which I feel like I've been waiting 3 months for this episode.
Yeah.
It does seem like almost that long, doesn't it?
It does. It's weird how that works out. So, and since there's so much to talk about and we do have an extra body in the Quinjet this week, Josh, why don't you give us a quick briefing on what we're going to cover and we will dive right into this.
Sweet. I will do that. And hey, I want to thank you for that meat that you left here for me. I think it was for me. I don't know. It seems a little rare,
yeah,
though.
Yeah. So it's tartar, but not really, because I think it's chicken. So you probably shouldn't eat the rest of that.
Oh,
it's like chicken.
Oh, okay. All right. Let's see if I can keep that from going down too far before the end of the show here. Okay. Well, this is a episode.
Hopefully you can stay with us for the entire time.
That's all right. Well, you got backup just in case. So that's good. All right. So this is episode 11, season 3, Bouncing Back was the title. It originally aired March 8th, 2016. It was written by Monica Owusu-Breen and directed by Ron Underwood. Now it's time to dust off the Terrigen fish oil bottle and just jump right back into the game. Our agents are back and they have two missions of priority here. One, investigate the mysterious theft of weapons from the Bogota Policia by an apparent inhuman. And two, find and destroy Gideon Malik. Daisy and Mac will take a team in to uncover the newest inhuman, but this yo-yo may not be the villain that she seems. And the Colombian police unleash their own little inhuman surprise on our heroes. So Daisy may just get another addition to her secret warrior team. Now, Coulson's going to tackle the problem of Gideon Malik, and even if it means using some very ugly techniques to get Werner von Strucker to tell them where to find him. That was uncomfortable, I'm just going to say. Now, what they don't know is that Malik has something that looks a bit like Grant Ward, but is definitely not Grant Ward. In Hydra's midst, I think it's called "I Can't Believe It's Not Grant Ward" is what it's called.
See, I thought it was if it looks like Grant Ward and it walks like Grant Ward, then it is Grant Ward, but obviously not.
This is Grant Ward with less calories. But now, if we can just figure out who's hanging out in space 3 months from now, then, you know, everything will be okay.
Three months from now? What is it with these flash forwards and the comic book shows? I tell you.
Yeah. They could have told us what was happening 3 months from now, 3 months ago, and, you know, we'd have had a little heads up on this. But
that would have been nice because, you know, of course, there weren't any episodes in between then, so that would have worked out. I was actually thinking we should do half of this episode in Spanish, you know, as an homage to the episode, but then I realized that I took French in high school, so.
Ah, no bueno.
No.
Okay.
So.
Bibliotech. That's it, guys. I'm done.
Okay, right. I didn't think there was much going on there. So
we're clearly from the U.S. based branch of S.H.I.E.L.D. That's what.
Yeah.
Who?
The one that didn't study that well.
Yeah. Well, we've got a few pieces of news. It seems like as soon as Agent Carter went away, then all of a sudden we started having more news about Agent Carter. So nerdreactor.com, who I honestly have really never heard of before, and I don't know what their credentials are per se, but they are stating that Agent Carter has been renewed for a third season based on a, quote, inside source from ABC/Disney, you know, television studios.
So, inside source. Take that for what you will.
It's Fozzie. It's Fozzie Bear.
Hey, that counts. That counts.
It's inside. So I think everybody wants to believe that Agent Carter is going to get renewed. It sounds like Haley Atwell really enjoys doing the show. And I feel it would be, you know, as Josh, as you and I discussed last week, it would be kind of ridiculous for them to not go ahead with that, especially when they had told us that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is renewed. But, you know, the schedule is the schedule. You know, it seems like it's a good idea to keep Agent Carter in the midseason replacement slot for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. But, you know, who knows? I guess we'll find out. We'll just have to wait and see, you know, like we've been doing.
Right.
Yeah.
So nobody should get their hopes up one way or the other.
Yeah, and you know, it's this may be a false story, or they're just fishing for, you know, something, people to go to their website or whatever. But it's fun
what?
To keep hoping.
I'm shocked.
It's fun to keep hoping and talking about the show, because it really was a great season that I enjoyed very much.
I loved Agent Carter, and I think season two was even better than the first one, but the ratings just weren't there, and they were diminishing every single week. And, you know, if you ask me, I think the best chance we're going to get is maybe if it goes to Netflix for season three, which I would love. I would be very, very happy with that.
Well, I mean, technically, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. just kind of crapped out in the ratings the first season, and they just renewed it,
yeah,
you know, on principle, I think, at that point, because they knew what they were up against. So,
yeah.
Who knows? The ratings, ABC, I think, with their Marvel properties have been, you know, and really we've only got like two shows here to talk about, and one's only been on, you know, 18 episodes total. But it seems like the ratings are less important to them than just producing quality shows, you know, that can live on.
Good point.
And, you know, so we'll see how that goes.
Good point.
We got Fitz and Simmons are actually guest starring on another series. I believe it's on... it's on
Disney XD, I think, isn't it?
Oh, is it Disney XD? I was going to say it was one of the Fox shows, but yeah, I guess it would be a Disney channel. They're going to show up on a show, on a cartoon called Spider-Man versus the Sinister Six. So it's the animated versions of Fitz and Simmons, but in Kastecker and Liz Henstridge are going to be, you know, lending their voices. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I looked at, they have a little clip online, and you can totally tell it's their voices, of course, because their voices stand out so much. But looked like a cute little cartoon. I haven't actually ever seen it before, but looked fun.
Yeah, I didn't know they had a new Spider-Man show out there right now. But it's interesting considering that we had Arrow and Flash show up on the animated Vixen series on CW Seed, you know, for the CW network and all that kind of stuff. And they used the live action actors for that. So it's cool that they are, you know, deciding not to use necessarily voice actors. I'm sure voice actors don't necessarily appreciate this, but the fact that they are keeping continuity between the shows with the voice actors. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool.
And then what's this S.H.I.E.L.D. Academy series that you made a note for here?
Yeah, so apparently I saw on the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Facebook page that they're going to be doing a little web series of just a 5-episode web series called Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Academy. And okay, what they're doing is they pick three viewers, and they're putting them in this little almost like a little reality show challenge, right? But it's supposed to be part of S.H.I.E.L.D. at the S.H.I.E.L.D. Academy. And the winner of this challenge, this 5-episode challenge that they're going to do, gets to play an agent on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Well, dang.
I didn't even get the invitation. Not that I could have won or anything, but apparently
we are ineligible. So
that's right. Yeah, we already did those challenges. That's clearly how we got our job. But they're supposed to be challenges that, you know, an actual agent might face. So, we'll see. We'll see how they do. The first one came from Coulson himself. So, you know, Clark Gregg was lending his persona to this web series at first. And I think that Fitz and Simmons are going to be on there at some point as well.
Oh, very cool. I do like the, you know, they are really keeping the fans engaged on the social media front here, it seems like. So that's pretty cool.
That is one of the things that makes these shows that you and I watch so much fun. So I hope they continue.
And then for fans of comic books, obviously there's the, as we had mentioned the other week, or actually the other month on our Agent Carter of S.H.I.E.L.D. case files, there's the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. comic book series now that actually has the characters from the show. They've made it into the Marvel comic universe so they can hang out with Spider-Man and Thor and Green Goblin, whoever else.
Did they win a web series? Is that how they did that?
To see Spider-Man? Yeah.
Yeah.
But there is a brand new series that is starting this week. It just came out on Wednesday, the other day here, and it's Mockingbird number one. And I have not had a chance to take a look at this, but I saw a preview of it online through, I believe, comicbookresources.com, and it appears to be very humorous. There's a lot of little in-jokes kind of in the background of the art and stuff like that. And so it's... you know, it's Mockingbird having to put up with other Avengers and stuff like that. So sounds like it'll be a hoot. Or I guess that would be for the owl. So
yeah, Mockingbird. A tweet.
Yeah. So
wait, all right. Well,
why don't we get started talking about Bouncing Back? And I want to start out by talking about that mysterious opening 3 months from now. You know, actually we'll come back to that. We'll come back to that because it's 3 months from now. So. I don't want to discuss that.
We're not going to wait 3 months, are we?
Not quote unquote real time.
Okay. All right.
Right. But the title is called Bouncing Back. So there are, you know, a number of, I guess, references within the show about characters bouncing back. The one that comes to mind is Yo-Yo, of course.
That cello player. Yeah.
No. And I was going to try to work in something about JoJo here as well, but I couldn't come up with a funny enough bit. No, but, you know, because Mac pointed out that she would, speed out to a location, but then she kind of snaps back, you know, like a yo-yo, right? She bounces back to location.
In the speed of a heartbeat.
She is. What's that?
In the speed of a heartbeat. That's all it takes.
Yeah. So, Joe, maybe you can help me understand that. So, I think it was the translation that Joey gave on the show was that she could go as far as she could run in a heartbeat. Now, is that because she can run, you know, we were seeing her go quite a distance. I'm guessing that's a heartbeat, but when she's moving at whatever Mach 3 or whatever it is, right?
Right.
Is that kind of how you saw that?
Yeah. She's basically like Quicksilver. But she can only go the distance that she can make it in a heartbeat. And then she kind of gets pulled back to her original space. I'm not sure. I wonder if it's like, it's almost like she's like imaging herself almost like sending, is her entire body moving or like what's tethering her to the original spot? Because you see, there's a part in the, where she's locked up and she's bouncing all over the place. But it's a really cool effect where she's just standing there at the same time.
Yeah, it's that kind of after image of that we see of her. Do you watch the Flash at all?
Oh yeah.
So it's very much like in the Flash when in the first season, Reverse Flash was able to actually be quote unquote in two places at once because he was so fast. So he basically was leaving an after image. So it appeared to be two versions of the same character when in fact he was just running back and forth between that. So
yeah.
That's kind of how I saw that. Really cool. Yeah, like you said, really cool effect for that, definitely, with the way they set that up. So while we're talking about Yo-Yo, one thing that they bring up with this character, which I thought was really refreshing for a superhero show on TV, correct me if I'm wrong, at least as far as the shows that we've seen on TV, you know, on the network television shows here, this is really the first character that's got some sort of faith basis in their in the makeup of their character for the show. Is that, am I forgetting somebody?
I can't think of anybody specifically that they've focused that idea on in a story.
Because, I mean, I know, you know, Daredevil obviously comes to mind, like, you know, on Netflix and stuff like that. And in the films, Nightcrawler is obviously very religious as well.
Right.
And has, you know, they both have a very strong Catholic background. So with Elena Rodriguez, a.k.a. Yo-Yo, she really has this deep-seated faith, which is, again, like I said, the word that just keeps coming to mind is refreshing because of the fact that she has a belief system already in place, and then she gets these powers, and so she folds that into her existing belief system. And we actually find out that Mac also is a, you know, has a religious belief system as well, which, as he mentions in this, it's something he doesn't really talk about. I don't recall him really talking about that before, but it does fit in with his character, right, Josh? I mean, just the way that he seems to hold people accountable for stuff and everything like that.
Yeah, and also that he's kind of a, I don't want to say a private guy, but you can always kind of tell that he's sort of within himself, you know, like he's not holding himself above people, but that he kind of has these personal feelings and beliefs, you know. That's how he kind of strikes me. So I thought it was interesting that they used him to make that connection to Yo-Yo.
Also, the thing that I also found interesting about this is that a lot of times when writers of films or TV shows introduce, especially in genre TV, in shows like this, or, you know, other sci-fi shows and stuff, I think there's a lot of people that can take religion and make it kind of zealous. You know, people are preaching about things, you know, and like you kind of, like you said, holding themselves above other people. And I didn't get that from Elena at all.
No, I agree.
Yeah.
She's very down to earth. And like I said, the way that she's able to fold the fact that she got these superpowers kind of into her existing belief system. I mean, she, unlike probably a majority of the other people that we've seen, I guess Joey would be the one main character that we've seen, you know, gain powers on the show this season. She's adapted quite well to the entire thing, you know, without any, you know, help, so to speak, of.
Yeah, and also started using them for good.
Yeah. Joe, do you think that the reason that she is able to adjust to these powers has something to do with her belief system, or do you think that that's just kind of the person that she is?
Well, you have a couple of things going on here. So I definitely think that her faith is informing her character. So she's a good person, and she's using that faith to inform her decisions, and she's making choices based on her beliefs and her belief set. So that's an important thing. So we can identify her as a good person based on the fact that she has faith in, you know, good morals, let's say. Mm-hmm. The second thing is she got kind of lucky with a really cool and rather easy superpower to adapt to. You can move real fast and you snap back. And there might be a few broken plates and a little bit of broken furniture, but I think I don't think it was like Joey's, where he was literally tearing apart blocks of a city when it happened.
It's less destructive. Yeah, that's definitely true.
Yeah.
Though
yeah.
Invisibility or X-ray vision, I mean, I don't know. I would love either of those. I think those are great.
Oh,
those,
yeah.
Those sound good to me.
So. Yeah.
I've been eating fish oil pills here for like a week. They're delicious. I did find you should not eat more than like one a day. Just FYI.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Different kind of power after that, huh?
Oh, it's very powerful.
All right, now Yo-Yo came from the Secret Warriors comics, right? She was actually a character in the comic books.
Oh, yes, definitely. Yep, mm-hmm. She was right there in the first issue of Secret Warriors.
Yep.
So she it's interesting that they didn't kind of keep the team together there at the end, but I'm really interested to see, you know, her make make another appearance. It doesn't seem like she'll be back next week, but I have a feeling, you know, as soon as they need her, you know, she'll be there. And I also did like the fact that, you know, it's her arc for the episode, very much your classic comic book superhero meeting a new superhero. They misunderstand each other, they fight, and then they become friends and then team up. So,
yes. However, doing it with Mac being the one person on that team that has no powers, I thought was a well done, you know, a good way to do that, using Mac for that, because he can make that connection through, like, you know, say the religion as opposed to the powers, which is the common thread among the other people with Daisy and Joey. And so,
yeah, Mac was in rare form this week. He was brilliant. I loved everything he had to say.
They did share a common language, the language of love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, going back to the theme of bouncing back, we've got Coulson, who is having to still deal with Rosalind's death and his return from Maveth and the things that he saw and had to take care of there. Now, initially, when I watched the episode, I thought that the president had asked Coulson to meet him at Rosalind's apartment, which, of course, they hadn't conveniently really. I'm surprised the dead body wasn't there. I was like, boy, this president's kind of a jerk. But when on further viewing, I realized that Coulson actually invited the president there, and I thought, well, okay, that's pretty powerful, because he's using.
I took it as like the president wanted to meet with Coulson, but Coulson said, okay, well, we're going to do it here, you know, at Rosalind's apartment, because
right.
He tells May, you know, I'm not going to show him the secret hideout, and also he wanted him to see that. He wanted to see what had happened.
Well, and it sounds like President Ellis knew Rosalind, right? Because
yes.
She was head of ATCU, yep. So he had worked closely with her. So I think it had the intended effect, but it seems like it was a little bit harder on Phil.
Yeah.
And so he's kind of bouncing back from that, but and also from having how did he put it? Something like, sometimes we have to do dark deeds, when he was talking to Fitz. The hard choices. He was talking about hard choices that they both made when they were on Maveth. And it seems like Phil is not really bouncing back as, how do I want to say, as in as sunny a disposition as he has been previously. So what, Josh, you read in your brief a little bit about the fact that he, you know, was having to use some ugly techniques to get Wernher von Strucker to, you know, disclose Gideon Malik's whereabouts. Can you talk about that a little bit more?
Well, you know, Coulson really surprised me, which I guess the character continues to do. It is such a different character than we saw before this series started. And clearly lots of things have happened, of course, but he has changed as a character more than just about anyone other than, you know, Grant Ward, seeing as how we're now on our third incarnation of that particular character. But, right. And he is in a super dark place right now. I mean, he has fallen hard. As a matter of fact, I would say maybe he has not bounced back and is kind of lying to himself about where he is.
Wouldn't you say stereotypically he's probably not as dark as he hasn't lost himself, I guess is what I'm getting at. So he still may have ways to go. Like you said, he may not have bounced back yet.
I disagree. I think he may have lost himself. We just haven't seen it yet. But I think that as he works towards getting closer to Gideon Malik more, I think we're going to see him see that he has lost himself more obviously than we even did this week. I can't not imagine before this episode him putting Von Strucker in that machine to do what he needed to do.
He even comes to the point of saying to people that he recognizes that it's not something he really wants to do.
Yeah, but he does it anyway.
Right, but I mean, as the leader of, I'm not trying to justify, you know, what he did, and you know, we've obviously seen how this brain sifting, you know, machine, you know, can really kind of tear somebody apart. But he, you know, if you're going to make an omelet, you got to break a few eggs, and he is trying to justify the ends, you know, by having to do like he said to Fitz, having to make these hard choices. So you know, I don't know. It's Joe, do you think it's warranted what he was doing to Von Strucker?
Man, was this tough to watch. I was the entire time he's standing over Strucker, I'm thinking this is not the same character that was driving limos and waiting by Tony Stark's side in Iron Man 2. I mean, really has changed so much. But he has a steel jaw and just unflinching at this point. He has been through so much between what happened on Mavath, between everything that happened in season one, my gosh, and season two with the with the alien messages being downloaded into his brain. And I don't know if we're going to see the same Coulson that we saw previously. I don't know if that guy is coming back, but I do hope that he can bring a little bit more levity back into his life and be able to do what needs to be done. And at the same time, smile again and maybe bring Melinda May with him back from these dark places.
Okay, you know, I know how he can do that. Okay, so you know he likes cello music. So right. He just needs to, they need to call up Yo-Yo.
There we go.
And have her come and, you know, play for him. Isn't that?
I think it could work. I do. Yeah.
It's that she can play the cello. Have we not established that? No.
Cat's cradles as well.
I'm in a dark place. I've been through a lot. It's been a long 3 months.
So I guess, I mean, you know, hopefully I'm not in a dark place because I guess I just see what he was doing with Von Strucker as less dangerous or less evil than you guys.
Now don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it wasn't like you, not justified, but it was a different. I can't see Coulson doing that before. I can see somebody else making that call.
Even Nick Fury. Right. I guess it's just that, I mean, he's like we've said, he has been through a lot, and it's just he is now at a place where, I mean, like with Nick Fury, I mean, Nick has to make these hard choices, but he's battle worn, right? I mean, you know, we still don't know how he lost his eye. I mean, you know, who knows what that would do to somebody. But, you know, Coulson's lost an arm. I mean, it's everybody has these scars. Sometimes they're visible and sometimes they're not. And, you know, we just don't know how far he's willing to go. I think what we will see, or I think we will see how far he is willing to go when it comes down to hunting Malik. And, you know, whether or not he will, you know, is he going to choose to sacrifice parts, you know, other members of his team? You know, Von Strucker he's outside of the world of S.H.I.E.L.D., so you know, he is a pawn to be played. And fortunately, the kid's been played by, you know, a number of different agencies here. So
I will admit, as much of a jerk as he is, I do kind of feel sorry for little Werner there.
Yeah.
So. Yet I'm laughing. That's, I don't know.
Yeah, that's messed up, dude.
Sorry.
Yeah. All right. So, also in terms of bouncing back, we've got Daisy's team. We've got Secret Warriors here. They had their rescue mission, but were unable to save any of these Inhumans in the mid-season finale from Lash.
They looked pretty good though in this mission.
They are coming together quite nicely. I thought that Daisy and Joey worked together very nicely. I thought Yo-Yo fit in with both of them. You know, we had some great lines, right? That as Daisy's trying to, you know, put out the instructions, and Yo-Yo just goes and does everything. You know, gets the guns or runs and grabs the badge off the one guard and everything like that. It's really cool. And having these characters with these specific powers, like being able to work together, it seems really organic on the show. I've been trying to think over the last couple of days since I watched the episode, what makes this different from a Flash TV show or Legends of Tomorrow, where you've got a number of different characters. Joe, is there something you think that sets this apart with the, you know, multiple characters with different superpowers? Why does it seem to work a little bit better for S.H.I.E.L.D.? Or maybe you don't agree.
Interesting question. Off the top of my head, I have to say that, you know, S.H.I.E.L.D. operates, you know, as a structure in the Marvel universe. You know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe is almost like the other guys. I mean, that's really what the impetus was to start the show. So you have the stories of the guys you're not hearing about in the movies, and they're operating on a day-to-day level, you know, solving the world's problems in the shadows. So I think there's an element there that you're not going to find where in The Flash or in Supergirl or in Arrow, when these are really the main tentpoles of a lot of what DC is doing right now. I think the second part is that there isn't one person to prop up in S.H.I.E.L.D. It's not just Coulson. It's not just Mac. It's not just Mockingbird. It's not Sky or Daisy, however you want it. These people operate together, and they truly are a team that can operate no matter who might be active that week.
That's a good point. I think that may be it, that there's not a main character. People might tune in to see Coulson because he's the one we know, but yeah, Everybody kind of gets their equal and fair share. Whereas, like you say, with Supergirl, with Flash, or with Arrow, we are watching their show. So you expect to see more from that particular character.
And that team goes, you know, Star Labs is cool, but the whole team falls apart if Flash were not to be there. I mean, it's just not, there's no point.
Well, Star Labs also has really crappy security. I mean,
the S.H.I.E.L.D. open door.
Yeah. S.H.I.E.L.D. prides itself on their security. I mean, I don't think their base has been infiltrated unless you count. Oh no, I take that back. Cause Ward did bring in a couple of his guys. I think it was early last year, but, they've got a pretty good record.
They need to team up. See, they need to Flash and S.H.I.E.L.D. Okay. There's a crossover. Well, that won't happen.
See, what's cool about having Yo-Yo on the show here is that I feel like we're getting Flash, right? We've got this super speed character. It's kind of a different take on the super speedster. Joe, like you said, it's like Quicksilver, but not quite.
Yeah,
it's like the Flash, but not quite. And I like that. And you know, based on previews that we're seeing for what they've got coming in the coming weeks, we've got a lot more powerful characters to see. We've got a character, I don't think they spoke his name on screen, but according to the credits, his name is Lucio, and he was the one with the eyeballs that flash and turn people to stone or something along those lines. So, you know, we've got these characters that are aligning some for good, like Elena, and some with, you know, using their powers for evil or, you know, other advancements, whether we really want to call it evil or not, but it's, you know, not altruistic, definitely. And so Hydra snaps up Lucio. You know, they got him pretty easy with that net device because they are looking to, I don't know if it's like feeding Ward, a.k.a. Hive, or using, you know, creating an army for him. They talked about, you know, building an army previously, but they're also, we're not really sure what's going on with that. Well, Josh, what do you think is going to keep them from, like, snagging Elena or Joey if they are not with S.H.I.E.L.D.? What are the concerns that we have with our hero characters getting snagged by Hydra?
See, that's what worries me about Daisy sending them off and being independent. So basically, they're, and this is how it should be. S.H.I.E.L.D. is just the opposite of Hydra. They're giving them the freedom. They're setting them free to live their life and kind of be on call, you know. But Hydra seems to know about a lot of these. They were even looking for Joey, I think, or I guess that was the ATCU, wasn't it? But
it was the ATCU, but in the season opener, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, Malik has ties everywhere. I mean, he could have he easily have access to any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And they already know about Elena. So, I mean, you know, what's to keep him from just snagging them or anybody else that she tags up? But I guess maybe if that were to be, if it seemed like there was something going to happen, you know, there was some kind of warning that they were sensing, they could call S.H.I.E.L.D. right away and hopefully help them. But I worry about just kind of letting them go out there on their own.
Well, they got those cool Apple Watches now that
they
have
do
the S.H.I.E.L.D. logo on them. S.H.I.E.L.D. screensaver.
No one will ever know.
Branding. It's all about the branding, you know. It's
true.
That's where it is. Yeah, so that is true. The Secret Warriors are, you know, if that old saying, if you love somebody, set them free. So, you know, Daisy is making what she feels is a smart choice now to kind of give everybody their freedom and hoping that she can gather everybody back in time. Though, with the global threat of Hydra and the Inhumans and everything like that, having a number of your team spread out around the globe, I mean, that actually sounds like a much more intelligent solution than keeping everybody, you know, on the bus or wherever, you know, wherever their base is.
I also think it's going to make them more loyal and more willing to stick with S.H.I.E.L.D. and that team. And Daisy is really turning into a good leader, you know, not just a good hero, but she's becoming a good leader.
So, Joe, I know that Josh and I have talked about this before in the show with her character and actually all the characters. You know, we're now halfway through the third season, so we basically have 2.5 seasons behind us here. And there have been definitely episodes that feel like they are building block episodes. Mm-hmm. But I know from talking to you off air that, you know, you've been a huge fan of the way this season's been moving. What do you think about the way that they've been building up Sky, and then, you know, transitioning her into Daisy and making her this leader? Do you feel it's been organic enough? Do you feel that, or do you think that, you know, they're, you know, doing some kind of shortcuts where the writers are kind of just making her seem like she's more of a leader than you might think she actually is? What are your thoughts?
I do. I think that she is ready to become a leader. She's in a place where she's understanding herself and her role in the world more than she ever has. And she's a person we've seen come of age over the past few years into, you know, into a brand new character, literally. I mean, from the beginning of the show, she was just kind of a hacker girl who was taken aboard S.H.I.E.L.D. and became Quake, which is, whether or not they had that planned out, I still spin circles around that. But it's amazing to find that. But I do think that she is ready for leadership, and she seems a little wary. I mean, she's gone against her own mother. I mean, she's had to say goodbye to her father, and she's grown into her powers pretty strongly. And I think the passage of time, of course, helps in explaining a lot of this. It makes it a little easier for the writers. But I do think that this is a person who's at least going to be able to lead her own team of Inhumans and have a distinct understanding on how that should be done. Also, as far as understanding, the I don't know if you guys saw the promo this week for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. coming back, but the Motley Crue music coupled with the previews pumped me up in a way that I haven't been pumped up about previews for S.H.I.E.L.D. ever. And I like how they're doing the marketing, and I want to keep that going. I like the idea of just, these guys are ready to kick butt. It's been three seasons and they're super powered, and bring on the Secret Warriors. That has been such an exciting way to kick this off and not be so heavy and weighted down that I just feel like it's a little bit more fun and a little bit more exciting right now.
Well, there's a new trailer out for Captain America: Civil War, and honestly, I'm more excited for what's coming on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because I'm going to be getting it on a weekly basis. I don't have to wait, 2 months. By the time Civil War gets here, it's great, and I'm going to enjoy it. But S.H.I.E.L.D. is just, it's nailing it. And you're right; the previews are really doing a good job of keeping everybody excited and hyped for it.
Yeah, that Molly Crew song is, admittedly one of my favorite songs ever. So,
okay. Well, you mentioned how Sky became Daisy, and literally became a brand new character, and the leadership that she's undertaking. As Josh mentioned, we've actually got a brand new character on the show as well in Grant Ward's portrayal of, I guess we can't call him Grant Ward anymore. He is known as Hive, and the producers have let us know that is the character that Brett Dalton is playing now. But Josh, as you point out, this is the third incarnation of our third character that Brett Dalton's played on the show. I mean, he played the S.H.I.E.L.D. agent Grant Ward, and then he played the Hydra operative Grant Ward, and now he's playing the alien inhuman Hive. And, Gideon Malik is grooming him to become a leader. Very much a counterpoint, I believe, to Daisy and her secret warriors. He's going to be leading his...
That's an interesting way to look at it. I like how you stated that, where they're kind of bookending each other, Daisy and Hive.
Mm-hmm. And I had one of my friends point out the fact that, Brett Dalton may be one of the most talented actors and underrated actors that is working in TV right now, because he's been able to take this character and do such amazing things with it over the 2.5 seasons where, you look at people that are doing, 10 seasons of some shows, and I don't think they achieve some of the stuff that he's done in, 50 episodes here.
I got to agree with that, because he's made that character so much more interesting than he was the first season.
Yeah.
Especially the first half of the first season, but yeah, I'm kind of very interested to see where he takes it now, because
you were going to say you were rooting for him.
Well, I'm not really rooting for him, but I hope that it's not too black and white, this character. I don't know much about the Hive character itself, but you worry it just is some mindless monster with one thing on its mind or whatever. Yeah, I mean, I don't know where they're going to take him, but hopefully it's in a interesting and creative way, kind of like they did when Ward was just a Hydra operative.
They have my full attention on this. I don't feel, the fact that we haven't been, having a show on for 3 months, and we come back and he's still kind of this disheveled, shell of a creature, you know, there's still a bullet hole in his shoulder and his eyes are all sunken and everything. It's, he has not, you know, healed up or rested. And, you know, he talks about how he's going to make a believer out of Mr. Guerra because, you know, he's, I guess it's the fact that Guerra doesn't believe that he is the Inhuman, you know, this original Inhuman or this creature. Malik seems to have some questions about that as well. And then we get this scene at the end of the episode where, you know, he, I don't know what, Josh, what, how would you describe what he was doing at the end of the episode there?
Ooh, gosh, I don't, I mean, it went by so fast. It looked like he was attacking him and almost, and I want to say like he was punishing him because of some of the comments that Guerra was making to him earlier. But he was just, I don't know why he took such offense to that, but I think that Guerra didn't trust him or something, you know? And it almost felt like he was punishing him, but I have a feeling that it's something more than that. And especially now that you said how he was kind of, you know, mirroring Daisy's and how she's building a team, maybe he is going to be kind of building this Inhuman team on the Hydra side over there. You know, and that's certainly something we've seen in the comics. But they did grab what's his name, old Lucio, you know, Eyeball Man there. So maybe he's gonna do something. I don't want to say like hypnotize him, but you know what I mean, like kind of have him under his.
It looked like there was influence. This dust, kind of like his fingers were dissolving and turning into dust or sand, and kind of being blown off. I was just wondering, do you guys think that maybe he was infecting them with particles of himself or something?
Oh, I mean, he
seemed really weak. So I don't know.
That could be like he's kind of spreading him. Like it's almost a, like you said, an
like
infection.
A spore.
Yeah. Ooh. So
that could be interesting,
right? And I've been trying to think, you know, like a hive metaphor, you know, just in terms of, you know, our English language and everything like that. And it didn't extend very far with that.
But if it does, right? If he is using these Inhumans or maybe others as well, but I think probably just Inhumans the way he talked, to be a part of him, to do that like a hive, you know, so he's controlling all of them and he is the main.
Carrying out his will, right?
Yeah. Either that or he was, you know, just going to have him cook him some food, you know, a la Iron Chef is maybe that's.
Nice.
No.
I get it because nice. Mr. Guerra was the host of Iron Chef.
Yes, he's got Mark DeCascos. That's.
Yeah. you brought up Lucio again. I just thought this is, you know, there's really not too much going on with that character right now. It's he's this guy that like flips his shades up, and when he looks at you, apparently people turn to stone. But not really. There is some, you know, people return from that. I think it was Mac mentioned or called him Medusa Eyes. And I find it interesting that there is an Inhuman, a very famous Inhuman, part of the royal family of Inhumans, called Medusa. But her powers have to do with she has long hair that she can control, like, I don't know, like prehensile hair, I guess. That's the best way to put it. She doesn't have anything to do with, like, turning people to stone. And then you've got the Gorgon, you know, in mythology was the Medusa was a Gorgon, could turn, you know, characters to stone. So there's also an Inhuman called Gorgon who, again, doesn't have any power like that. He's got more kind of seismic powers and has hooves like a centaur or a minotaur or something like that. But there is a character, another Gorgon character in Marvel Comics that is a mutant, debuted in Wolverine. And among his other powers, he does have the ability to turn people to stone. So there is some, I guess, background for this in the comic books, which I found was interesting. And I'm just kind of interested to find out more about this character. And I like having these bad guy Inhumans out there that you know, have these really just kind of weird powers. You've got Gaera with the telekinesis. You've got this, you know, turning people to stone. And if we kind of go by the discussion that was happening in the episode about the fact that the powers are not random, the characters were talking about how they fill an evolutionary need. I think it was Lincoln was discussing this. This is kind of what he was taught. And I believe Mac points out that it's kind of an intelligent design. He's taken it more from a, you know, again, going back to that faith-based thing. Joe, I was wondering what your thoughts were about the way that the powers are kind of dividing up between the good characters and the bad characters. Do you think there's going to be some sort of, you know, yin and yang, opposites attract here or something like that going on?
It's an interesting way to look at it, but I'm not sure if, you know, all right, I got to back up and think that it seems like this episode is setting up a season that's going to be talking about higher powers. We have Yo-Yo with the traditional, you know, Christian faith. And then you have Hydra, which has faith in Hive. And then we're talking about the Inhumans that are believing in this idea of an alien intelligent design. So it seems like we have three competing ideas here, all centering around some idea of faith or meaning or, you know, trying to apply definitely higher powers to what is going on with superpowers in relation to Inhumans. That being said, you know, how they're filtering down into the factions playing between S.H.I.E.L.D. and Hydra, are they actually being superpowered to do good or bad, or are these the choices that people are making on Earth? I think that's kind of where it boils down to.
That's really interesting. I was just thinking about that there must be like a higher love, you know, down in the heart or hidden in the stars above.
Now we got to get a Steve Winwood appearance.
Yeah, I mean, because without it, life is wasted.
There time. You go.
So
have Mark Pascoe right. sing that.
So let's quickly skip ahead 3 months and get back to the beginning, which I think is one of the best opening moments of almost any TV show. I'm going to count this episode of S.H.I.E.L.D. with some of the best opening moments of Lost or with like an X-Files or possibly even like a Star Trek episode, still like a Star Trek Next Generation episode. We've got this Quinjet floating in space with blood floating through it. We see a cross float by, and then we see part of a, like a spacesuit or a shield suit of some kind with the logo on the arm, and then all of a sudden it looks like there's a an explosion, a fireball or something like that that goes up. So I'm taking solicitations for who you think was bleeding on the Quinjet here. Josh, what are your thoughts?
Who was bleeding, huh? I think the blood is from a fight of at least two people. as opposed to one.
Colonel Mustard.
But I mean just two people in the Quinjet, not like a group of them, right?
Yeah.
Who could it be? I think it's going to involve Hive. Who's the blood is? I didn't even think about that. My focus was on the cross.
Okay, so what about the cross?
Well, I think we were kind of led to believe that the cross may belong to Yo-Yo.
Okay.
That
seems like a safe bet. I did some screenshot comparisons, and it appears to be the same cross that she was wearing around her neck.
But I don't think it's Yo-Yo wearing the suit. I think that's going to end up being somebody else that may sacrifice themselves. And I hope what they do is they kind of tease a little bit more each episode until the finale. You know, like they give us a little more on that. Not too much. Just little snippets,
awesome.
Clues here and there, you know?
Like a little bit more of the scene each
week?
Yeah. Oh, wow. What a great idea. That's awesome. Joe, do you think there was somebody in that suit, or do you think it was just a suit that was floating in the ship like the way the blood and the cross were?
Well, you know, I got to say, this reminds me of Breaking Bad. They did a season of Breaking Bad where they did a flash forward and they showed you a little bit at the beginning of each episode.
In black and white.
Yeah. Yeah. And I definitely think this is, you know, taking a cue from that style, and it's going to be fantastic. I hope they do this every episode.
Oh, now you guys got me really excited for that. I really want to see that. I'll be disappointed if they don't do that.
So we have the blood and we have the cross and we're overlooking the earth and we're talking about a lot of themes of faith here. And there's a lot of symbolism going on in that shot. And it will be easy to say that's Mac up there with the cross, sacrificing himself for Yo-Yo as 3 months of a relationship develops. I don't know. That might be too easy of a read. Maybe it's Joey. Maybe it's him getting up there, you know, kind of a red herring and with Mac and him sacrificing himself to take out, you know, to try and take out Hive.
Right. See, now I wasn't sure that there was anybody in that particular uniform, just because all we see is basically the shoulder patch.
Right.
Yeah.
Like I said, the cross appears to be the same style. The beveled cross and the same kind of gold chain and everything that Elena's cross is. But, you know, with her powers, I wouldn't discount her. It could definitely be her cross, but she may not be on the Quinjet. You know, she could have run into the Quinjet to do something and somebody could have grabbed the cross and have it come off. And like you said, there's a lot of symbolism going on in there. So I, like I said, I think they want you to believe that it's Elena, but I don't know that she's on there. Mac is a good suggestion. I was really upset when I thought they were going to get rid of him last season. So I would hate for them. If they're going to send off any character, I think they will do a good job and, you know, be respectful of the fan base for the characters, but I really would hate to see anybody, you know, any of the old guard go away. I mean, you know, Joey would be tough to see go away too. I mean, he seems to be a great character for them, you know, 4 or 5 times that we've seen him now. So, but, yeah. So Josh, it looks like we got a mystery we'll be able to talk about here for the next 2.5 months.
Oh, good. That good. Keeps us in business.
Yeah, it definitely does. So I did have one other reference that was pointed out to me. I thought this was just crazy enough that I would put it in here. The colonel with the Colombian military or policia, Colonel Ramon, he was actually in the Knight Rider reboot from 2008. He wasn't the main character, but I think he was on every episode. So he's doing pretty good for himself, you know. He's moved up from cheeseball Knight Rider show to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Whole kit and caboodle there.
Yeah. So any other things that I didn't bring up that either you guys want to say about the episode? Anything you liked, didn't like? Any other, you know, things you saw?
I really personally liked the elevator music that Coulson got to listen to on his way to talk to Gideon Malik on the phone. That was good. And I'm interested to see the relationship between General Talbot and Coulson now that
they're
forced to work together.
Yeah, that's going to be one of those great, you know, two guys who love to hate each other, just rubbing up against each other. Because of course, you know, the one that used to have the power now has to answer to the other one. So that's pretty cool. Joe, what about you? Anything else that you want to mention about the episode?
Yeah, when are Fitzsimmons really just going to get together? It's time. We're on the second half of season 3. They already kissed, and now they're shaking hands again. Come on.
Yeah, what happened? I thought that kiss was going to be like, okay, all right, we're good now. Let's do it. Let's do it.
Yeah. Yeah. What are they doing? Shaking hands. Starting over. No.
They had to revert back to their 16-year-old selves.
No more fabricating this will-they-won't-they drama. It's time. They need to be a team. Yeah. They're Fitzsimmons. None of this. It's over, all right? He went to the ends of the earth. He went... intergalactic to save her. It's over. They've recovered. Oh, yeah, I'm done.
What if Fitz is up on the Quinjet?
We're gonna
get that again.
Nope. Ain't doing that. We've already done that. We've already done the sacrifice. Yeah. We've already done the exile to another planet. We've done it all. We've done her in love with someone else. They kissed. All right. That's it. It's over.
I hear. All right. Fine. I'll let him know. That's what it is. So.
Tell him he's got to change his Facebook status from it's complicated to in a relationship. That's
100%.
That's it.
Just got to do it. Right. Yep. I understand. So, all right. Well, thank you both for joining me on this week's episode of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files. And I look forward to whatever else we're going to get the rest of the season. This was a great way to kick off kind of supposedly the last run here, the last, I don't know, what, 12 episodes we're going to get before the end of the season. Very exciting.
Oh, it's going to be good. You know, if you guys enjoyed this episode and talking to our good buddy Joe here, please leave feedback for us on iTunes. We would love to hear from you. Or give us a email. Send it to shield@randomchatter.com. Hop over on Twitter @AgentsPodcast. Or visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/agentspodcast.
And you can check out the other podcast shows that Josh and I host, including Green Justice, an Arrow podcast, and Scarlet Velocity, a Flash podcast, on the newly revamped randomchatter.com website. So go check that out. All shows are also available in the iTunes Store and through Stitcher for Android or iOS. You can also find out more from Special Agent Tavano at retrozap.com, or listen to him on the Brews and Blasters podcast. So you guys get like drunk and shoot like sci-fi guns off and stuff like that?
Definitely not the same. Definitely not what we're doing over there. It's more like me and my buddy Chris, we get together and we've been talking Star Wars for years. We used to do it at a local pub down the street in lovely Salem, Massachusetts. And we decided to take that conversation onto the airwaves and do a podcast. We were talking about it anyways, and that's what we're doing.
Excellent.
Yeah. And you guys got some great conversations going and some good insight and ideas over there. So I recommend that show.
Yeah, definitely check that out.
Thanks.
And if you guys are enjoying Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files podcast, please be sure to tell your friends about us. So for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, this is Jay.
And this is Josh.
Signing off from Level 7.
This podcast is not endorsed by ABC Television or Marvel Entertainment. The official website for Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. can be found at www.agentsofshield.com. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and related elements are copyright Marvel Entertainment, LLC.
Transmission terminated.